Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, it is Michael Bumpus. Hey, Bump, how's it going?
What's up, guys? I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
We're good. We're good. Hey, we saw earlier this morning that DeAndre Hopkins been ruled out for this Sunday against the Seahawks. We know that Kyler Murray will be a game time decision, but going back to Hopkins, what is losing him? I know he's been out for a couple games, but what does not having him mean for Seattle? Does it make it any easier, or are they still a handful?
They're still going to be a handful. I mean, you still got AJ Green. Christian Kirk is their leading receiver right now with over 600 yards. Still got Rondale Moore. They got weapons, but when you lose arguably the best receiver in the game, that gives that secondary one less person to look after. But we know what Kyler Murray does if he plays when he gets outside the pocket and even within the pocket. I mean, people talk about him getting outside the pocket and being special. I've seen him drop some dimes to these dudes standing tall in that pocket. So you lose Hopkins, one less body to worry about, but they still got some ballers over there.
Now, Bump, what do you make of Kyler Murray being 50-50? Do you feel like he is going to go? And if he does go, will he be compromised, or do you think he'll be just fine?
I mean, obviously, if you're waiting until game day to make a decision, something isn't completely right. So if he does play, I would expect him to be a bit off as far as, I guess, his physical capabilities. But let's not forget, this is a young man. You know what I mean? Like, they bounce back and can still play at a high level even when he's banged up. And he's just a special talent. So, I mean, you go in the game as a Seahawk defender if Kyler Murray is playing, expecting that he's 100%. That's the way you have to treat him. But in reality, something's going to be a bit off. It's just to what extreme.
Hey, when you're looking at the Arizona Cardinals, they're obviously great defensively, great against the pass. I don't know if Buda Baker will play or not. He's got a heel injury and missed some practice time. But when you look at their defense, what makes it especially tough for the Seahawks offense? And likewise, what's the Seahawks offense going to need to do?
I mean, they got players on every level. I mean, you got Golden, who has 9 sacks. You got Simmons on the second level. You got Buda and Murphy on the third level on the back end. We'll see if Buda plays. They rally to the football well. The thing they're not great against is the run, though. So if there is a weakness in this defense, is you have to be able to run the football against them. But they just have playmakers at every level. They're quietly one of the most talented teams in the league. I think just because they're the Arizona Cardinals, people aren't really paying too much attention to them. It's hard to ignore that 8-2 record. But defensively, they just have guys on every level, you know, guys who can change the identity of the game. I mean, Golden's coming off the game where you have 3 sacks. Murphy's having a good year. He's got 3 interceptions. We know what Buda Baker does. So they got guys who fly around to the football. There's this clip of Buda Baker. I want to say it was a year or two ago where he flies downhill. It's against the Seahawks, and he hits a running back. I want to say maybe it's Chris Carson. And, you know, he makes the play. And he's walking around. It's like, no fear, man. I don't fear nobody. You know, and that's the attitude of this defense. When I watch him on film, it's like these guys are flying around. They fear no one, and they believe in themselves. So when you combine that with all the names I just mentioned, they could be dangerous.
Bump, I'm having a hard time with this game because you see one clear matchup that is not in the Seahawks' favor, and that is specifically third down. And the offense has really struggled all year long on third down. The Arizona Cardinals come into this game one of the best defenses on third down, and it leads me to believe that the best way to win for this offense is to just be great on first and second down, and to be able to move the chains on first and second down. Bump, do you see it the same way? How do you see this game? Is this going to be more about playing for, you know, third and shorter opportunities here, or how does this offense get themselves to move the ball up and down the field more effectively and more in rhythm?
Well, I think that's the point right there. You just mentioned people focus on the third downs, which is big, right? You got to be able to extend drives. But what does first and second down look like? I mean, third and four is beautiful. You know, third and 10, third and 8, or third and 15 when you get behind can be tough. So what does this offense need to do? They need to have a clear-cut game plan on how to attack first down. You know, are you going to be run heavy? Are you going to use Diestres and the jet sweeps or whatnot? Like, your first down has to set up everything. And really early in the game, right, your first downs have to set the tone for the third and the fourth quarter. forgot I was talking to, I think, Paul Moyer yesterday. I'm telling Moyer, I'm like, man, these guys have to run plays in the first quarter that are setting up things in the third and fourth quarter. You give them a look on first down. You run the same play a couple of times, then you hit them with some razzle dazzle or just something special in the third or fourth quarter. So it's all about just getting a push on the line if you decide to run the football, and then protecting Russell Wilson. I mean, we've talked about this offensive line, I feel like, every year the past 4 to 5 years. And, you know, they've been struggling this year. You know, Dwayne's not having the greatest year. Damian Lewis has struggled a bit. So they can solidify some things up front, protect and get a push, and set things up for later in the game, I think we'll start seeing more success on third down.
Can I get to the offensive line stuff? Because I know that they've had draft picks on offensive line. They've made free agent signings. Is it a lack of investment that it's been with Seattle, or is it a lack of hitting on those investments?
I wouldn't say a lack of investment. I mean, they bring guys in. You got Jackson. You drafted Damian Lewis. You bring in Dwayne Brown a few years ago. You get rid of Fetty. You bring Sheldon. I mean, they're making some moves on that offensive line. They're just not hitting, honestly. I mean, and here's the thing, man. Dwayne Brown's been good for a long time. And, you know, he's had a rough couple of games. I assume he's gonna bounce back. Damian Lewis is still young. I think there's talent on that line, but when people talk about making moves for the Seahawks, they're always going for the big name, right? Odell Beckham, you know, they wanted Antonio Brown at one point. You got Jamal Adams. It's rare that you hear people saying, all right, there's a nice offensive tackle out there. Let's go and get him, because it's just not the attractive move. I think eventually they're going to have to do something on the offensive line. But as it stands, I mean, guys just got to step up and play better. You know, it comes down to technique, and it comes down just one-two.
I mean, Bump, what do you make of the offensive line? I mean, you bring up all really good points. I mean, I was a big advocate for Jack Conklin instead of 20, you know, different offensive line, you know, signings back in, you know, 2019 or 2020, whatever it was. But you look at the offensive line and how that has not come together for this team for whatever reason. You can, you know, lay out any reason. It has not been successful for this group. How hard is that for a first-time play caller to really find and establish who you are?
O-line is everything. I mean, people, you're going to focus on the quarterback, the running backs, the receivers, the tight ends, because they touch the football. But without linemen, it's 7-on-7, and you don't get paid millions of dollars to play 7-on-7. That's the tool to help you get better. It's all about that offensive line. There have been some struggles there, and I think it's a position that needs to be addressed. But in end of the day, if those five guys can get on the same page and trust each other, I mean, when it comes to chemistry and relationships, I mean, you can say the quarterback and the receiver, they need chemistry. They need to have a good relationship. That's true. But on that offensive line, man, you got to be able to trust the guy next to you when we run this stunt. Okay, we're going to pass this guy off to my guard, or we're going to fan this side of the line, you know, when we're getting blitzed off the edge. There's so much communication and trust that goes on that offensive line that people don't really see. So I think if they're not going to make a move, I think these guys just have to really get on the same page when it comes to combinations and stuff. And then just win your individual battles, man. If those tackles can be stout and give Russell some time, I think they'll be okay.
Hey, Bump, I want to take a sec with you to look around the rest of the league. We had a hype train on Wednesday, and one of them was the Titans are the best team in the NFL. I thought that was the case right now. Would you board that hype train? Were you there on Wednesday? Are they currently the top team in the NFL?
Man, it's hard for me to get on that train, but you look at what they're doing. It's impressive, man. Vrabel has those guys over there playing without Derrick Henry, you know, without Julio Jones, the guy who they were going to depend on. Are they the best team in the NFL? You know, before, a couple weeks ago, I was on board and I was going to say the Rams were the best team in the NFL. So right now, you have to lean towards the Titans and the Green Bay Packers at this point.
You know, Bump, talking about impressive, it's been really impressive to watch the New England Patriots this year and Mac Jones and this whole crew, and particularly defensively, Bill Belichick being able to kind of revamp that whole team back together. A lot of naysayers about Bill Belichick after last year, and you get it, but man, you look at what they're able to build, Bump. I mean, what does it say to you about Bill Belichick and about transitioning away from a franchise quarterback like Tom Brady, the greatest to ever do it?
Man, it says that he knows what the heck he's doing. You know what I mean? He knows what type of personnel he needs to run his system. I mean, you look at Mac Jones. I mean, Tom Brady's a GOAT. We'll never have another Tom Brady. But goodness gracious, man, he's as close as it gets. He even has a I forgot who I was talking to. I was like, this dude is a rookie in the league. He already has a knee brace. You know what I'm saying? He just looks like an old man out there who's so composed. And, you know, Belichick just knows what works, man. And with all the changes that's going on in the NFL, everyone wanting to spread the game out and play a certain style of football, Belichick has been solid, man. He goes, look, we're going to play great defense. I'm going to get me a pocket passer. Forget all these athletic dudes getting outside the pocket. I'm going to get a couple receivers around him, no superstars. I mean, Nelson Agholor is making plays now. You know what I mean? He's still got N'Keal Harry over there who struggled, but he's still around. Belichick knows what he's doing, man. It's impressive, and I'm happy for Mac Jones. I say in 2 to 3 years, the Patriots are going to be real contenders. I mean, if not this year, I mean, people are picking on to make a run this year too.
I feel like I should have known better, right, than to bet against Bill Belichick. But when I was looking at all the first round rookies that were taking the rookie quarterbacks, I don't know that I was assuming Mac Jones would have more wins than the others combined.
Yeah, you know what got us was that picture of him with a cigar in the locker room, man. He had the dad bod, doesn't look impressive. I think we judged a book by its cover, but
I
know at that quarterback position, you don't have to be the fittest person out there. You got to be a leader. You got to know the offense. You got to have a cannon, be able to execute. Young man is balling.
You know, Bump, immediately people want to be so quick to react, right? Oh, the San Francisco 49ers made a huge mistake. Look at Mac Jones. Look what he's doing. And there is time for, obviously, Trey Lance to develop and for them to go down that road. But how much is that going to factor into Kyle Shanahan? And if his seat was to ever get hot based off of that decision not to take Mac Jones and instead go with Trey Lance?
You know, Trey Lance was a risky pick just because he hadn't played a lot of football, right? And then the thing about Mac Jones too is people are said that he's just surrounded by so much talent. There's no reason for him not to win, right? And you can use Tua as an example. Tua's not having the greatest career so far. You can say he was surrounded by so much talent. But at the end of the day, as a coach, you have to go with the quarterback that you think fits your system and what you want to do. And Kyle Shanahan went with the athletic guy, you know, the guy who can run that read option, the guy who can get outside the pocket. I think that when it comes down to it, when he's really on the hot seat, he's going to be forced to play Trey Lance, and Trey Lance is going to determine if he's going to be there or not. So I'm not mad at Shanahan. I think as a coach, as a GM, you're a leader of a ball club. You got to go get your guy. Forget what everyone else thinks. That's what Belichick did. That's what Shanahan did.
All right. He is Michael Bumpus, host of the Seahawks pre and post game show. Make sure you tune in 3 hours before kickoff. You guys start at 10:30 this time around, right? 1:25 kickoff, to tune in. Michael Bumpus steering the ship on that one. All right, Bump. Good talking to you.
All right, guys. Take care.
Again, that was, sorry, I got the timer. That was at 10 a.m. So make sure you tune in then to hear Michael Bumpus on the Seahawks pregame show and then stick around after the game for the Seahawks postgame show. That was Michael Bumpus on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Don't forget, Football Fridays are powered by the Snoqualmie Casino Sportsbook. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, Washington travels to Boulder tomorrow to take on the 3-7 Buffaloes in the first game of the post-Jimmy Lake era. What is the real headline?
This is a game Washington should win, which means fans have absolutely no faith it'll happen. Now, Jake, on paper, when you look at these two teams, the way they match up, Washington should be favored for good reason. In pretty much every single measure, they outperform the Buffs. And yet, we know that this is a team that has failed to meet expectations all season long. So are you predicting a win for the Dogs?
Well, I can't. I can't predict a win for the Dogs. I mean, everything has been so up in the air this season so far that I don't know what to expect from Washington. They should win. Out of this matchup, Washington is the better team. But Colorado has made a game out of, you know, certain opponents the last couple weeks. Oregon State is a respectable team within the Pac-12, a team that Washington lost to themselves, and they were able to beat Oregon State a couple weeks ago. So I think really what it comes down to me is the same couple principles stay true. Can Washington stop a run game to at all? Because, you know, Colorado does have a very good running game led by Jarek Broussard, 4.8 yards per carry, 618 yards on the season thus far. So, I mean, they have a decent running game that Washington is going to have to respect. Brandon Lewis, a quarterback, he isn't spectacular, but, you know, he takes care of the football. He 10 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, isn't turnover prone. And, and really, this is about Washington. Can they establish themselves? Can they get the offense going? And one question you may have is, Does Sam Heward see the field at all?
I do want to know that. Do you know the answer?
I don't. I don't know the answer. And quite frankly, I wouldn't put him on the field. If there was any plan to put him on the field, he has two games remaining in terms of his red shirt. I wouldn't even be considering it for this game. Maybe the final two games, maybe the final game of the season. But it would be negligence on Washington's part if they try to ruin Sam Heward's red shirt.
All right, next up.
Headline rewrites.
Sticking with college football tonight, Friday night game, Cougs hosting losers of just one straight game. The Arizona Wildcats tonight.
Humble brag.
On 710 ESPN. Yeah, it's not 20 anymore. It's only one now. What is the real headline?
Are we seeing the beginning of the Jake Dickert era? Jake, I said this earlier in the show that of the two universities, it seems like if there was one interim head coach that was more likely than the other to take over, it would be Jake Dickert for the Cougs versus Gregory for the Dogs.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with you
on
that.
Well, I know.
Jake Dickert is somebody that I think Cougs fans are endeared to with the way that he handled this whole situation post-Nick Rolovich. And he's gotten his guys to play. I mean, think about the situation that they're in. Middle of the season, you have six coaches. Your half of your coaching staff is fired. And then not only are you trying to get everybody else to play and get ready for that next game against BYU, but you're also integrating a new staff. I mean, the situation is mind-boggling, something that I've never really seen before.
Yeah.
And Jake Dickert has done an amazing job with it. So will he be the next head coach? I don't think so. Will he be a serious candidate? I actually do. I do believe that people on the Palouse really, really like Jake Dickert and are very, very high on him.
That's the thing. It's like yesterday you had your list of, and if you guys missed it, the Jake and Stacey podcast, you had your list of five head coaching candidates for either school. I feel like Dickert should be one of the five for Wazoo.
Well, I don't know if he should be in the top five. I think that, you know, when it comes down to it, push comes to shove, I don't think Dickert is really somebody that is going to move Washington State forward, is going to propel them forward, but somebody that I do believe they should try to find a way to keep him within the program. So if you go and get an offensive-minded head coach, then I think Jake Dickert still should remain on as the defense coordinator. I believe he's done that good of a job.
I'm going to interrupt myself to ask who your personal favorite is for a fit for that job of the five you listed yesterday.
Oh, man. I really still like, I know a lot of people are kind of on the fence on this one, but I still really like the Graham Harrell situation, air raid. Add to that, I really like the idea of having him and the staff that he wants to bring in offensively come in. And I just think that a big priority would be Washington State, the state of Washington in terms of recruiting. So I like that idea. But the name that also really stands out to me that I think would make a lot of sense would be Jay Norvell out of Nevada. He's done an excellent job there. I think it would be a stable hire. It would fit some of the profile of what they want to do, and somebody who has been tried and proven over the course of his long coaching career, both collegiately and in the NFL.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, as if there was any other choice in the AL, Angels DH pitcher Shohei Ohtani named the 2021 AL MVP in the National League. Bryce Harper takes home the award. What's the real headline?
That's right. It's a unanimous one for Ohtani, rightfully so. Here's the real headline. Neither MVP's team was close to making the postseason. It's not a joke. It's not a weird gotcha moment. It's just a pause to say, you know what? In baseball, it might be the biggest lack of a connection between a stellar performance, in the case of Ohtani, like maybe a generational performance, and a team that wasn't close to touching the postseason, mm-hmm. because it is harder than, I don't know, can you guys think of another sport? I mean, it's hard for one player to impact the game on pretty much anywhere. I would say, obviously, given five on the court, basketball would be one where it's a little easier. I'd say quarterback can have an overwhelming impact on a team versus other like skill position players.
Yeah.
But like, no matter what you do in MLB, if you're on that team, like there's nothing Ohtani could have done more to push the Angels to the postseason.
You're certainly right. I mean, what he did, I mean, he is MVP of the entire MLB, in my opinion. I mean, what Shohei Ohtani did this season was absolutely bananas, unlike anything we have ever seen in Major League Baseball, period. So, unbelievable special talent. It is unique that it does come, you know, from every other sport. MVPs are not only given to, you know, the best player in the league, so to speak, but also on the hottest teams and most successful teams. And so with Major League Baseball, it is a little different from that aspect, but both of these guys are more than deserving of winning these MVP awards. For Shohei Ohtani, I hate that it's within your own division, but I hope that Shohei Ohtani's success isn't just a one-year wonder, because he is great for the game of baseball. It is so fun to watch somebody do something different. It is so fun to watch somebody kind of transcend the game, and that's exactly the type of player Shohei Ohtani is.
Can I throw in a last second question? Literally, we have like a minute here, but it's an interesting question, and I'm genuinely, and I don't mean this as an insult, forgotten about this player. From the 509 on the Mac and Jack's text line, is there no hope in Stone Forsythe? I don't think there's no hope. He was a 6th-round pick with kind of like a maybe high upside, but like not really a huge risk that you're taking. But he's been a healthy scratch in, I think, every game.
Yeah,
certainly many.
No, I wouldn't qualify him as a no-hope candidate. But next year,
you weren't pending your future on him.
No, not at all. I wasn't even pending him on being really a backup.
It's a good question, though.
But it is a good question, and it is concerning to a degree. Based off of the success of the moves that they've had addressing that position in their history, it hasn't been a great track record. But what you're hoping is that, you know, Stone Forsythe does take that next step forward in this next offseason, and that he does develop into something. But he was always a developmental project to begin with. I don't really truly view Stone Forsythe as the exit strategy, particularly at left tackle, maybe at right tackle with the whole Brandon Schell experiment, possibly. But I definitely would not say Stone Forsythe is your left tackle of the future.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Going to take a look around the NFL next. And don't forget, it's still Friday. And Monday and Friday on Jake and Stacey, we take your calls. I'll give you the question and the number to call. All of that coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Football Fridays are powered by the Snoqualmie Casino Sportsbook. Now, before I go through NFL headlines, I'll remind you guys that young Jacob and myself are live from the Cairo shelter, which is set up in place of an emergency or crisis for people in the state to be able to have a resource to turn on their radio. And no matter what, they can receive presidential messages and information and all that kind of stuff. And so obviously we have to go through training, right? We have to know what to do in the event, the rare event, but possible event that happens. And so Jake and I, this is our second training out here, and this time we're broadcasting live. And I'm going to say two things. Number one, I cannot remind you enough, and you guys are going to be so sick and tired of me saying this. I'm going to be like your nagging friend. Please get a battery-operated radio for your emergency kit for moments like this. Secondly, there's a lot of, and Curtis, you would love this. I'll see if I can take you one. Ready-to-eat meals that they have for, like, Army or, like,
MREs.
MREs. Are these for, like, do astronauts use these? I don't know, but it's a three-course
meal. Soldiers eat them.
Listen, this is 500 calories for one.
No, 5,000 calories.
5,000 calories for one. They don't expire until 2025, and it's a three-course meal with a dessert.
Oh, wow. I mean, pretty impressive. And, you know, when you look at this situation, it is sobering that we're here.
Yes.
and you know, knowing that we, in these moments, that there are all these preparations, that this shelter exists to be able to give our audience and the community out there at large, life-saving information. And so very cool to be a part of something like this, a special community here at Cairo, a trusted community here at Cairo. But it's pretty crazy. We are literally, our show is the testing show for FEMA and for Cairo, that this shelter and everything, that's functional, that it works. And so pretty cool to be a part of groundbreaking broadcast.
We're very honored, very excited. And you guys, thanks for sticking around with us for this one and dealing with us being remote. You guys have all been awesome. So let me jump into these NFL headlines. Khalil Mack will undergo season-ending surgery. That's to repair an injury to his foot. He's been out since week 7. The Bears were hoping he can get some rest and turn things around. He obviously was not able to. So he's done for the year. To replace him, Chicago has signed Bruce Irvin, the former Seahawk, will go there to try to replicate some of the help that Mack would have offered. Obviously, no one can be Khalil Mack, but Bruce Irvin going to be there to provide some help to the pass rush for the Bears.
So two former Seahawks, and Cassius Marsh has been there.
I think you mean that there are three former Seahawks, because you know who else is there? Curtis?
Well, Jimmy Graham.
I know that. To,
well,
yeah.
Duh. Yeah, Jimmy Graham.
Yeah, duh, obviously.
Curtis is like, what? What
know,
other
Curtis,
defender?
Curtis. Nine times out of ten, it's about Jimmy Graham.
Well, yeah. Cassius Marsh gets you know, promoted from practice squad. Now you sign Bruce Irvin. And I'm really happy for Bruce Irvin. Honestly, I had no idea what his career would look like after that torn ACL that he suffered early on in the season last year here in Seattle. I thought maybe he would be retiring, that his career would be over. But nope, he's back. He's healthy. He's ready to go, and he's ready to contribute. And very interested to see how he does for Chicago.
And one of the most fascinating matchups of the weekend, it's Panthers and the Washington football team, which, fine, but here's the deal. Here's the twist. Cam Newton will get the start for Carolina, and he'll be facing off against his former head coach, Ron Rivera, with Washington. I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this one, too. And look, there was no hard feelings in that divorce, so it's not like it's a rivalry of any kind, but it's a reunion, and we'll see how that one goes. I mean, you know, Cam Newton is going to get that opportunity to be the starter, and I will be very anxious to see what he looks like with that team, especially coming off of that very, very impressive win against Arizona this last week, and the Washington football team struggling as a whole.
Some injury updates from the Cardinals. I talked to you guys about this earlier, but Kyler Murray, a game-time decision. He's been dealing with that ankle sprain. John Clayton was like 50-50. We had him on at 10:30, said he's not entirely sure. I heard Brock Heward earlier with Salk, who seems pretty confident that Murray will play. I would guess Brock would be surprised if he didn't, but game-time decision for Kyler Murray. You know who's out, though, is DeAndre Hopkins, the wide receiver. He is out in this one.
Now, that is a huge blow to the Arizona Cardinals. That's a big boost to the Seattle Seahawks. Why? It doesn't mean that the Arizona Cardinals are devoid of weapons. They've got a ton of weapons still, but DeAndre Hopkins is a player that you have to tilt the coverage towards. He's a guy that you absolutely have to pay extra special attention to, and now you can be a little bit more balanced in your coverage. You can be more balanced in your approach, and that will help the Seattle Seahawks defense.
When you're looking around the league, Nick Chubb expected to be back. Obviously, that's great news for Cleveland. That run game has really been something else. You know what? I regret not asking both Bump and Clayton when they were on with us, but I can still turn it toward you and have this conversation. As we've seen quite a few teams now, thankfully Cleveland got good news, but quite a few teams lose their starting running backs. Not surprising, right? The only running back last year to have over 1,000 yards and actually play all 16 games or start all 16 games was Derrick Henry, and he's done for the season in Tennessee. But you've seen some teams really stumble without there. Seattle has had a really hard time getting the run game going, and then you've seen other that are just able to carry on no matter what. What are some of the biggest, I guess, patterns and similarities you see between teams like Cleveland and I'll throw in San Francisco, who are able to get it done really no matter who they have?
Two things, and they're two very obvious things. Number one, great offensive line play. That's number one. It doesn't really matter who the running backs are if you have great offensive line play and are consistently opening up holes, consistently being able to move you know, the line of scrimmage and win that 6-inch battle at the line of scrimmage. That's number one, and that's what all those teams have. Number two, Stacy, it's part of their identity. Then they've stayed true to that identity. So Cleveland, they are a run team. They don't shy away from that. The 49ers are a run team. They're a run-oriented team. They always have been a run-oriented team with Kyle Shanahan. And so it's really no surprise to me when you see them continue to be successful despite the injuries at running back. But it does make it frustrating when you look here to Seattle that has been such a struggle for them overall. But I would say that the difference in Seattle is that offensive line play has not been good. And two, you have no idea what the identity of this offense is as of right now. And I think that Russell Wilson obviously being out for 3 weeks did hurt that, as you felt like maybe you were building towards something a little bit offensively. But outside of that, that's the difference, Stacey. It's those two things.
The Eagles and tight end Dallas Goedert have reached a $59 million extension, according to ESPN. Now, obviously, great news for Goddard, but what I really want to talk about when it comes to Philadelphia has nothing to do with this story at all, or the extension for a tight end. It has to do with Jalen Hurts and whether or not he's their guy moving forward, Jay.
He absolutely has to be. I mean, you look at the Eagles and any of the issues that they have had this season has not been because of Jalen Hurts. I mean, you know, you look at the Dallas game, he didn't play great in that one early on in the season, but outside of that, you know, Jalen Hurts has had a very, very good year. I mean, he is, you know, he's almost got 2,700 yards of all purpose right now. I mean, we still got how many games left in the season? I mean,
eight
games left. So, I mean, he's had a fantastic year to start. They could be more explosive in terms of touchdowns, but overall, they are getting it done both through the air and on the ground. They are one of the more diverse offenses in the NFL, young and exciting, and it's a way for them to continue to keep improving and building off of what they have here with Nick Sirianni in year one. Now it's going to be a question of how do you build a well-rounded team under Nick Sirianni, and that's the big question for them moving forward.
All right, this hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. It is Friday, and that means we're taking your calls at 1. Every Monday, every single Friday, we open up phone lines at 1 p.m. and give you guys the floor to sound off. This one's going to be about the Seahawks, given that they have a game going on this weekend. We've been previewing it today. So here's the question. Seahawks win if what? If what? Now I'm going to give you the number to call. I'll remind you of the question. Jake and I are going to answer it first, though. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This is so unrelated, Curtis. You're going to kill me for this one. If you had to bet $1 million on being able to do a simple thing that's a normal habit everyone should have, but you're so inconsistent with it, would you make that bet? For instance, if you're someone that can never show up anywhere on time, or if you're someone that, like, no matter what, you'll burn food if you have to cook dinner, like just basic things where you're like, I would not bet that I could do that.
Okay, what would that be for you though? Because this is
nothing, absolutely nothing. I do everything perfectly.
Oh, really? Okay. So I will admit a fatal flaw that I have is I literally cannot remember a list of things to do. So if Brooke, my wife, she says, hey, I need you to literally go into the other room and I need three things for you to grab.
Like, I need pears, apples, and bread.
Like, hey, I need wipes, diapers, and a onesie. I am going to forget one of those three things in a matter of 15 seconds. And I guarantee that will happen every single time. And it drives her crazy, which I can definitely understand. But now she's gotten to the point after, you know, 10 years, we're about to go into 11 years of marriage. Like, it's just like, oh, you forgot this.
Does she know halfway through, like, to yell them at you again? I mean, you're halfway down the hallway. Maybe, and she's like, wipes, diapers, and a onesie.
Maybe he hasn't gotten to that point. But definitely after she tells me something and I leave to go to the grocery store or she has to leave or something, she always usually texts me the list, which I greatly appreciate.
Yeah, if I'm being honest, and this is a moment of self-reflection, in honesty, it would probably be being on time someplace. Like, mm-hmm. if it was like, bet your life that you can do this, I don't know that I would feel comfortable doing it. No matter how hard I try sometimes, it's like, it just things happen that I can't control, like a car in front of me driving slowly, or maybe I need to get an iced coffee.
Yes, I was going to say, that is the part that's 100%. And Stacey will come in, maybe she'll be late, and she'll be like,
jingling
down the
hallway.
It was so crazy. And
is that an iced coffee in your hand?
No, I got this way earlier today. Look, it's like all this condensation on the outside.
That's unbelievable. Well, Curtis, do you have a fatal flaw?
Curtis, what's yours if you're going to make us do it?
My fatal flaw, I just care too much. I work too hard.
Don't be that
guy. Peeling back the curtain on Stacey's inability to show up on time. Every night we send an email about what we want to talk about the very next day.
I'm so mad about that.
Every time we have a pre-recorded interview, I put the time on the email and then blow up the time to like 72 font, bold it, underline it, italicize it, just so that I can get my point across, like, hey, we've got something a little earlier than normal, be there on time.
Have I ever missed one?
You've come in like halfway through on a couple of them.
No, I have not.
Yes, you have.
No. Yeah. No. Yes. All right. Well, let me get
generally,
my
you've
question.
Been pretty good.
Yeah, I would say time, you're batting about 90% here.
Yeah.
Honestly, if I'm batting 300.
You're a Hall of Famer.
That's exactly right. 3 out of 10 times, yeah. I make it there on time. That's MVP numbers. The Seahawks win on Sunday. If what? If what? That's going to be your caller question. I'll give you that number in about 5 minutes. So get your phones ready and get your answer ready. Jake, what's your answer?
My answer is, ooh, there's a couple of ones that really stand out to me. I'm going to say, I really do think this is the key to the game for the offense, though, honestly. First and second down efficiency.
Okay.
If you, even with third down numbers being low, if they are if they are great in first and second down, they're moving the football, they're moving the chains, they're constantly getting first downs. You can score points that way. You can absolutely put yourself in a good position. I just don't like the idea of trying to play conservatively, or, hey, we need to run the football, therefore we're going to be stubborn about it, and then we're going to constantly get ourselves into, the Seahawks get themselves into, you know, third and medium, third and long situations, and that kind of play into Arizona's hand. So it has nothing to do against the run game. It's just, if you're going to run the football, I want to see them be wildly successful with it. I want to see them be effective and efficient on first and second down. And I believe if they can do that, it will allow their offense to get back into a rhythm. It'll allow Russell Wilson to get into a rhythm, and then you'll start to see them perform better. So first, second down efficiency, Seahawks offense, that to me is going to be a huge key.
Do you think that there's a key to how they perform on first and second as far as like a run pass balance? I guess what I'm asking, I should have given you more time for this. Is there something you feel like they aren't doing early enough in those situations them in third and long?
It's hard because I want them to, it has to be balanced. It has to be connected. It really, what my biggest frustration offensively is, looking at something and saying, hey, if it's working, stick with it. Run game, pass game, it doesn't matter. And I know that's a novel concept, but that is something that this offense has struggled to do. They have struggled to continue to keep pushing the button on the pressure point that is working for them. And so I think that to me has been something that this offense just has not allowed themselves to stay in a rhythm. And, you know, they look back to the Pittsburgh Steelers game, the one thing that, yeah, they ran the football, but why were they continuing to run the football? Was because it was working so well for them. Yeah. And I want to see them continue to stick with that, not just the run or the pass, but, you know, on that drive, what is working? What is marching the ball up and down the field and keeping that thing connected together is just something we have not seen this group do, you know, for a full 60 minutes.
I'm going to go with the 509 here who texted in, and I think you are right on it with this one, 509. They win if they rush for over 100 yards. I didn't have 100 yards specifically, but I think they win on the ground. Arizona's defense, if there is one weakness, it's against the run, where they're 19th. Allowing about, 116 or 119 yards per game. That's middle of the road. That's not stellar. It's not horrible, but it's at least one area where they've been more susceptible. They are a very good pass defense, and, mm-hmm. and they've had a great pass rush. They've had some injuries there that they probably weren't expecting, but, the one area where they've struggled is against a more dynamic team, a more balanced team. And by balanced, I don't mean 50-50 run pass. I mean, a team that has a run game or a great passing game that can beat them either way. And, I think, too, what I would even add on to the 509, which, again, made a great point, is outside of just 100 yards rushing, it's specifically I want a running back or running backs to combine for 100 yards from the halfbacks. Mm-hmm. Because if you look back at the first, like, 8 games of the season, if you go before the bye, in about half of those games, on paper, Seattle had over 100 rushing yards. And I think they were averaging about 4.3 or 4.4 a carry. On paper, that looks totally average. Totally fine. The problem is it never felt that way. Like, never once in week 8 did I look back and say, yeah, they've got a pretty solid run game, middle of the pack. Mm-hmm. No, it feels very much bottom of the group, and I think they're around 22nd.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you there, and it's going to be a big part of it, and that part also is going to be on the offensive line itself as well. I mean, you look at the Arizona Cardinals defensive front, they are a group that is fast, they can get after it, but they're not as stout up the middle, they're not as stout in that run game and from that aspect. The other thing that I would point to in terms of, hey, Seahawks win if, turnovers. You got to generate turnovers. If you're going to beat a good football team, a team that's playing better than you at the current moment, you have to be able to generate turnovers. You have to steal possessions away and be able to capitalize that on them with points. And that is another huge aspect of it to me when you look at this game and what the Seahawks are going to have to do, what they're going to be able to do in order to give themselves that edge. And that's got to be a key factor to it.
All right. I talked about, you know, whether you'd be willing to bet on yourself for like little things, like would you bet on yourself that you'd be on time? Right. And we were kind of joking about making those guarantees. So I actually want you to be able to guarantee this answer to that question, where you're looking at it and you say, the Seahawks win if, you know what? I'd bet on this. I would bet they win if this happens. What is it? What's that key? Is it, I would bet they win if Russell gets going and has 4 touchdowns. If Russ has 4 touchdowns, I would bet on them winning this game. Or maybe it's, you know what? if they get, you know, win the turnover battle, get two picks to none for them, I bet that's a win for them. I want to hear what you would be willing to guarantee, what you'd be willing to shoulder and say, you know what? This is the key. This is the key to a Seahawks win. So that's your question. The Seahawks win if what? 206-421-3776. This time I want you to call in. We're turning it over to you guys, giving you guys the mic. Again, that number is 206-421-3776. Call right now. That's next.